everyone. Welcome back to Doing It, the Sex and Relationships podcast where sex has never been so nerdy with me, your host, Hannah Witten. This week, I am joined by the wonderful Dr. Tara. Dr. Tara is an award-winning researcher, podcast host, sexual communication expert, and a tenured professor at California State University. She teaches and researches into why sexual confidence and sexual communication are extremely important in relationships, where they come from, and how people can improve them. Dr. Tara is also a sex and relationship coach, where she focuses on coaching clients in effective sexual communication, and she's the host of Love Bites, a podcast that focuses on sexual wellness and sexual exploration. Her work also focuses on sexual mindfulness, and she gave a TEDx talk on becoming sexually powerful. I wanted to get Dr. Tara on the podcast to share all her insight from her own academic research into sexual satisfaction, confidence, and sexual communication, and share some tips for us all. We chatted all about her research and how effective sexual communication is the number one most important indicator of sexual satisfaction. Tara talked about the importance of developing your own communication and making time for talking about sex with your sexual partners. We spoke about what the difference is between macro and micro sexual communication and why you need to practice them both. Tara offered some helpful suggestions on how you can check in with lovers after sex and how to create more openness of sharing on the experience and moving away from performance pressure questions. We spoke all about sexual confidence, and Tara even turned the questions on me and asked me what I think being sexually confident is and my own experiences of developing it. Tara spoke about how self-esteem is the main part of being sexually confident and gave some really interesting insight into ways you can develop your own self-esteem. Tara and I also chatted about what sexual mindfulness is and the importance of being sexually present to improve sexual satisfaction. And we also spoke about her Thai identity and misconceptions around Thai sexuality. Tara talked about her own journey from growing up in Thailand to where she is now in her own sexuality and how much work it took. I really enjoyed this chat because Tara got me thinking so much about what sexual confidence really means and made me want to go away and practice more sexual mindfulness meditations. As usual, you can find more info and links to everything that we talked about in this episode in the show notes over at doingitpodcast.co.uk. And please let us know what you think over on our Instagram, which is at doingitpodcast. If you like this episode, please give us a rating and review over on iTunes and Spotify. It is really appreciated. And without further ado, here is my chat with Dr. Tara. Welcome, Dr. Tara, to the podcast. How are you doing?
I am doing excellent. I had an orgasmic morning, so I'm thankful.
I don't think I've ever had anyone respond to that question by telling me about a sexual experience of theirs, but I'm grateful for it.
How are you?
I'm good. Do I share something? I didn't have an orgasmic experience this morning.
That's okay.
But I might have had one in the night. I don't know. Sometimes I masturbate myself back to sleep after breastfeeding. Like, the baby's now gone down and I need to get myself back to sleep as soon as possible. And an orgasm always helps along the way.
I love that. I mean, big fan of masturbation.
We can start a fan club for it. Okay, I want to get stuck into all of the brilliant work that you do. But to kind of give us a sense of that, do you want to tell us a little bit about your research into sexual communication?
Yes, I'd love to. Thank you for having me and for me to share about more about sexual communication with your community. So as a professor of sexual communication, my focus is very much trying to understand the different variables that go into long-term sexual satisfaction. And in my journey of researching for both, like researching for my textbook that just came out and researching for that large 5,000 participant study, I found that communicating about sex, aka like talk about sex with your partner, is the biggest contributor to long-term sexual satisfaction in your relationship. So I guess that would be the number one finding that, you know, a lot of us talk about like sexual communication is key. It's so important.
Yeah. But I was going to say, I swear like in all of the videos I make, I'm like, communicate. But I really hope that we can like get into the nitty gritty of like what that is.
Let's do that. Yeah. I would love to do that because I don't want to be one of the people that just preach like sexual communication is important, but here are the things you should be talking about. Here's how you can start. Here are also other nonverbal things that you should be doing. And nonverbals are very much communication. It's 80% of communication.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess like, yeah, what did you find in your study? Because you said that like communication is one of, or the biggest factor with relationship satisfaction. And so is it kind of any kind of talking about sex, or is it, or, you know, there are different styles of communication. Like what is going on? What, like, how are these satisfied couples talking about sex? Like what's their secret?
Love it. I love that question. It boils down to two aspects, the micro communication and the macro communication. Mm-hmm. The micro communication is that like day to day, it's the sexual initiation, it's the aftercare, it's the dirty talk, it's the sexting, the little things you do in a day to, oh gosh, I hate the word spice up your sex life. Really, it's to maintain, let's say it's to maintain passion.
Right. Okay.
Passion is not daily life tasks that people normally do. So you really have to assert yourself in a way that is unique in a small way every day to maintain passion. And these are the things that I, you know, had just said, and we can totally go into one or two of those topics that you are interested in. But the macro communication, in which a lot of people call it like relationship check-in, I call it a sexy check-in, because it doesn't have to be like serious, like let's sit down and have this conversation, like buying a house. It doesn't have to be like that. It can just be over a glass of wine. It can be over a date night, dress sexy. Let's go out. Let's chat. How are we doing? How are we doing sexually, babe?
Yeah.
You know, like, and let me
macro conversations.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. Are the macro conversations happening in a non-sexual context? So are they happening when you're not having sex, basically?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. It's talking about sex when you're not having sex.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this, like, how would you feel about asking your partner, like, hey, babe, for the last month, how would you rate your level of sexual satisfaction from 1 to 10?
Oh, yeah.
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 Right?
I feel like that's probably a question that like not many people even ask themselves, let alone their partner.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. They're not asking themselves, therefore, you know, and I want to go back to the fact that you said like, oh, not a lot of people even ask themselves. That's very observant and true, because whenever I work with a client, And they come over and they, you know, show up and they're like, I want to have a better sex life. My wife or my husband, my partner is not doing their part. I'm like, well, what do you want? What is an ideal sex life? The first answer I usually get is, I don't know. Well, I mean, that's problematic, right? You're asking for things that you don't even know.
Yeah, I've definitely asked that question to my partner. I've kind of said, in an ideal world, like how often and what kind of sex do you want to be having?
Love it.
Yeah.
So what kind of answer did you get?
Probably, like, honestly, like, less sex than I think I was expecting. So that kind of, like, takes the pressure off of it.
100%. Just like,
actually, I'd be super satisfied with, you know,
three times a
week. This.
Two times a week. Yeah.
Oh, less than that at the moment. Jesus.
Well, research found that the happiest long-term couples have reported that they want high-quality sexual session with their partner once a week.
Oh, okay. That's what they want.
Yeah.
That's who knows what they're getting.
That's what they desire.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always ebbs and flow, like context, right? Like whatever that's happening to your life at the time. You have a young child. Like, that's very different than when your child is 10 and play with them, you know, play on their own with their friends, and you guys are back, like, you know, having more alone time together again. So different.
Yeah. So different. So one of the things that you mentioned in the, like, micro communication was aftercare. And I think that's something that a lot of people miss out. Also, we kind of think of the term aftercare as only really being about, like, if you've done a BDSM scene or something. But what kind of things should people be asking after they've had sex?
Love that question. And honestly, aftercare is now for everyone. Like, we should all do aftercare, and we should all spend quiet alone time with each other after sex before we go about our day or get on our phones or start watching TV. Aftercare, we should make a point to do aftercare, you know, at least 10 minutes. Because people are so quick to go back to what they were doing, get on the phone, watching TV.
Yeah.
Right after sex, and not really taking in the fact that your oxytocin was just peaking and releasing, and you're having all these hormones that really you should be capitalizing. So yes, aftercare is for everyone, and it's to maximize that good feeling after sex. So what question should you be asking? The very first thing that you shouldn't do is, did you come? I mean, I know this is directed towards men, but, you know, women are in a heterosexual relationship can also teach their male partners, like, you know, saying, did you come, has quite negative connotation that the only thing that matters for our sex session is that I came and you feel accomplished. Because it's not about that. I'm here with you. I want to just connect with you and have pleasure in many different ways. And did you come is a big don't. A do is, how was it?
Yeah. What was your favorite part? What was your least favorite part?
Yeah. How was it? I would say first ask, how was it? And, you know, this will really gauge, like, people who have been talking about sex will be like, oh, I love it when you did so-and-so. Like, I love it when you, like, went down on me in the middle of penetration. Like, you know, I came when you just, like, licked my pussy. And, you know, but even if you weren't comfortable going into details and you were like, I think it was great. I think it was more connecting than the other time when we were in a rush. Like, even that is informative for
you. Kind of like how it made you feel, not just like what sensations you enjoyed.
Exactly. Like, in general, how was it?
Yeah. Once again, you have like the micro and the macro of how was it?
Yeah, exactly. And you can always go about anything that's like informative. But I think we should also talk about, how do people get to the point where they actually disclose these things, right? Because most people don't disclose these things. From research, we know that most people tend to omit how they actually feel or lie. A lot of people say they came when they didn't.
Yeah. So how do you overcome that?
Sexual confidence.
All right, let's get into that then.
And we've been talking about sex for a long time. I mean, I want to ask you first, like, in your understanding, you know, how does one become more sexually confident?
From my experience, it's trial and error. Like, I think the thing that's made me sexually confident is the kind of the fake it till you make it strategy of, like, putting myself out there. Sometimes it working, sometimes feeling horribly rejected. But even in the times where I felt rejected, like, it being okay afterwards and be like, okay, I survived that. And then that actually giving me the confidence to, like, try it again.
Yes. And that, in a way, is what everyone's kind of doing in life, right? Like, for everything, not just sex. It's like, let me try a little bit of this, even in cooking. Like, let me try this out and see what happens. And maybe, oh, next time I'll add more salt. Next time I'll, like, right? But as you do more of something, you start to perfect it. Now, when it comes to sexual confidence, in my research of the 5,000 participants, I found that the very key of sexual confidence is your self-esteem.
Right. Okay.
Sexual confidence is what you project or express is external. How you feel about yourself is internal and very much related to how you're able to project yourself confidently. So if we dig deeper into self-esteem, now, what do you think are some things, Hannah, like, that you do to maintain or increase or enhance your self-esteem?
This is so funny. I feel like the interviewee relationship has been switched but I'm fine with it. I feel like I'm in a therapy session.
I love asking questions.
So my self-esteem, or like what helps build it for me? I do actually consider myself quite lucky in that I feel like I've always had good self-esteem. Although actually, no, I do remember having quite low self-esteem as a teenager. So I'm like, how did we get from there to here? I think there's something that...
Can I say an observation?
Oh yeah, go for it.
Because I have observed you and studied your profile and the way you interact and your contemporary history.
Yeah.
I think you learn to have very high self-esteem from authenticity.
A nice compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, like you became very authentic. I don't know you prior to what is shown on social media, but you became very authentic and you share yourself authentically in all spaces and in all like aspects of life, right? Mm-hmm. When you were like talking about sexual interaction or like dating or marriage or having a baby and the difficulty of having a baby and being a mom. So I feel like you living authentically and speaking authentically every day, it feeds into you feeling good about yourself. And that's really self-esteem.
It makes a lot of sense, though, because I would say that like those teenage years are definitely a lot more influenced by a lot of the messaging of how I should be acting, what I should be thinking and feeling about myself, about my body, about relationships and dating and sex and everything. And then like as I got older, and actually started having more experiences and realizing like what was actually, like you said, like authentic to me rather than kind of like what box I think I should be fitting into. But that makes a lot of sense because, and that would be why I think so many people do struggle with self-esteem because these messages that we receive about how we should be are so pervasive. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much, I mean, I have a very similar experience where, you know, in my teenage years and I mean, even early 20s up to even recently, I very much like continuously question how I should act, how I should behave. And I'm not authentically myself. And when I go into spaces, I almost like have to put on a show, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have to like fake it a lot of times. And there is like two different running theories. If you want to talk about that, it's like the Amy Cuddy version, like fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other theory, which is like, you know, how do you feel authentically inside? That is like an endless debate. To me, it doesn't matter as long as you feel good about yourself, like whatever, which method you want to go through, as long as you feel good about yourself and that's your self-esteem. How do you feel truly about yourself? Do you feel like you bring value? Do you feel like you have capabilities? Do you feel like you are a smart person? However definition of smart is, do you feel like you make the right decisions in life? Or even if you make the wrong decisions, do you feel like you bounce back? Mm. Like all of these things combined make you and your self-esteem. So if you view yourself positively, you are able to project yourself positively. And that's a huge part of sexual confidence.
Yeah. Okay. So we want to become great sexual communicators. In order to do that, we need sexual confidence. And in order to have sexual confidence, we need good self-esteem. So how do we develop this self-esteem? Like if someone's got low self-esteem, what's kind of some advice that you would give them?
You would be such a good TA, like great, great summaries. Like,
I feel like in another life that I didn't start making videos about sex on the internet, I am a teacher. So
you sound like a teacher. You did a good summary, like synthesis. So yes. Building self-esteem is achieving little things consistently.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's like, I feel like self-esteem literature, like when you look at body of research, it's so complex. Like there's so many theories and methods and this and that. To me, let me boil it down for you. Everyone that's listening, and even for myself too, this is how I apply it, is making sure that you are achieving little things consistently. And that's how you build feel-good energy within yourself, and that's self-esteem. Mm-hmm. I feel good. I make things happen. That's my self-esteem, right? And it doesn't have to be something crazy. This is why I'm not a fan of big daily goals, because I think it gives people, modern people, pressure that we didn't need. Mm-hmm. We're going against the current. Like, we're not salmon, you know? We're not salmon. We're human. We go with the flow. And right. I think people are forcing their way through and not achieving, and have lower and lower and lower self-esteem. For example, instead of like, oh, I'm gonna squirt tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. That's on my to-do list. That's my goal.
Yeah. Is it on your to-do list? I'm gonna put my baby down. I'm gonna go squirt. I'm gonna squirt tomorrow. I'm gonna watch a 5-minute video about squirting tomorrow.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, oh, I'm going to embark on sexual mindfulness journey. I'm going to start journaling about my sex life and how I feel sexually, like mm-hmm. sexual exploration. I'm going to start sex journaling. Okay. Instead of, oh, I'm going to write one full page every day. You know, and then of course, like after 2-3 days, this is why people shouldn't do like New Year resolution, because
you're an anti-resolution person. I see.
Right. Like first 2 months of the gym is always full, and then third month is empty.
Yeah.
Because like big goals like that hurt your self-esteem. Saying, oh, I'm going to write one full page of journaling every single day is not helpful. Mm-hmm. What's helpful is I'm going to write one sentence every day until I feel comfortable. Then I'm going to write 2 and 3 and 4 and a paragraph and one page. Mm-hmm. So let's start by writing one sentence in our journal every day about our sexual exploration. Mm. And it can be anything. Like I do this every single day. I write like at least 3 sentences in my journal every day. Something I'm thankful for, someone I'm thankful for, and how I feel sexually.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just so simple and no pressure, and life's great. I go with the flow of the universe, and I don't have to like force myself when I'm busy, making it another stressful thing.
Yeah. So it's just like breaking those just little things down so that you are actually, you've got those achievements, because you can be like, I did this today and I did this today. Even if they are like, they seem like small and inconsequential, it gives you that like boost.
100%. Mm-hmm. And research in positive psychology will show that achieving little things daily builds your self-esteem.
Mm. Yeah. Can it be just as simple as just like, I had a shower?
Sure. Yeah. Like whatever you feel is an accomplishment. Yeah. It's very subjective, right?
Because I didn't have a shower today. I didn't get a chance to. So having a shower is an accomplishment for me.
Yes. I love it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of showering, but that's a different topic. I'm a shower every 3 days kind of person.
Fair enough. Each their own. Each their own. I know that California is having a drought constantly. Yes, so you're helping.
Water conscious, if you say.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. I kind of want to go back to, you said about mindfulness and the journaling, because you have an ebook on sexual mindfulness. Do you want to talk a bit about what sexual mindfulness is?
Yeah. Sexual mindfulness is the ability to be present and non-judgmental in the moment during sex or a sexual experience. Because when I say during sex, some people think penetration. Any sexual experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And that's pretty hard, because like.
It's a simple definition, but very hard to do.
Yeah.
Staying fully present and engaged with no judgment. Mm. Right. Like, let's put that into context. A context where someone is not present is when you're thinking about something else. Intrusive thoughts happens all the time.
Yeah.
Intrusive thoughts or thinking about something else, thinking, when will this end?
Yeah.
Thinking about past like sexual interaction that was better than this one.
Yeah. That's the judgment.
Yeah. Or not, if not thinking about other people, thinking too much about yourself and the way you look, the way you sound. the way mm-hmm. you should be looking and sounding. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna start faking my orgasm so this ends. So all of this is non-present examples.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in a way, if we're talking about sexual mindfulness, those are examples of sexual mindlessness.
Oh, mindlessness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Brutal, right?
Yeah.
People have said I can be brutal, but I kind of
think like when you put, because I'm like, that's such a normal experience, but the word mindlessness, I'm just like, ooh, that hurts. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Let me whip you into shape.
Yeah.
But basically, mindfulness, in a way, it's a simple thing that's hard to do that we can all try to do on a regular basis through different mindfulness practices like journaling, breath work, meditation.
Yeah. And those are like three things that I feel like people talk about them a lot. It, not just in like the like sex sense, like, but also just in other parts of life as well. And they're always the things that people are like, and especially me, I'm just like, meditation, journaling, da-da-da-da. But then as soon as you actually like start doing it, you're like, okay. Like I have not even had the chance to since my son's been born. But before that, like for a year and a half, I had like a daily gratitude practice. And it honestly made me feel amazing. I was so happy. And I am now, obviously, as well. It's not like I stopped doing my gratitude practice and now I'm miserable. But it's, that kind of like daily journaling, it was so small. And so like, but it felt really significant.
I love that you share that because like for me too, you know, I started 3 years ago and I only do three sentences because I don't like pressure and I don't want to be like, I'm going to write one page. Like, nope, I'm writing three sentences. That's my boundary. I have boundaries.
I was like, I was like three things I'm grateful for. And it literally could just be the weather.
Yeah. I'm a lot of times I also write, like, I'm thankful for my legs because I was like walking to the cafe.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I'm thankful for my legs. I'm thankful for my boobs.
Fair enough.
Thankful for my assistant. Thankful for my friend. Like, just so simple. And it takes less than, like, realistically, it takes less than 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is definitely something everyone can do. It's just that remembering to do it and making it a habit is difficult.
Yeah.
Because creating new habits is difficult. And, you know, there's a lot of speakers that are very well-renowned and famous talking about creating new habits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really having to do it little by little every single day.
Yeah. So how can these things help with staying mindful during sex? So if you have like a mindfulness practice outside of sex, is it a case that during sex, like it, by osmosis, you'll just like be better at it? Or is it still kind of like an active thing that you have to
do? It's very much like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very much transferable. So one of the things that I talk about a lot is sex meditation or sexual meditation.
Ooh, and what's that?
I have free like guided sexual meditation on YouTube. And it's just, if anyone wants to start practicing sexual meditation for 5 minutes every day, I have a guide on YouTube that it's just simply the same as regular guided meditation, but it focuses on sexual sensations and sexual thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So I have different ones that I recommend. So the first one would be sexual thoughts. And this is a 5-minute meditation practice where you just follow whatever prompt that, you know, I say, like, think about this. And you just think about that. And even the fact that you are sitting down quietly, focusing and thinking about sex for 5 minutes every single day. There is empirical research from the University of British Columbia Sexuality Lab that show that this practice enhances female and male sexual functioning like tenfold.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. So it is so powerful. You just have to do it. Yeah.
Come on,
there's
people.
Empirical homework. Proof. Like, there's proof. You just have to do it. And I try to make it as easy as possible for people to just listen. Like, you can be in your car. You can be in your bathroom. You can be anywhere private for 5 minutes, just 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Listen to this in your headphones and follow the instructions. You're not alone.
All right.
You're not in a quiet space.
I'm putting this down as homework for myself.
Yes, just 5 minutes. And you will find that you feel sexually differently after a week.
Oh, wow.
Because now you're thinking about sex mm-hmm. daily. Some people go by day, have not thought about sex once. And some people have done that for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't use it, you lose it. We all know that for a fact, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm living, breathing that right now. So, so that makes a lot of sense.
But instead of like a fear base, I don't want it to be like, oh my God, like you don't have sex, you'll be shitty at sex. Like, no, it takes 5 minutes daily to maintain the oil in your engine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can totally do it.
Yeah. And like, even if you're not like having sexual experiences with a partner, still kind of maintaining that connection with yourself as a sexual being.
Oh, 100%. How that is more important than the partner. Like when you maintain yourself and you feel good sexually and sexually empowered on your own, that is easily transferable to a partnered sexual situation. You and your own like sexual empowerment comes first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I wanted to ask about, so you're from Thailand and you moved to the US, and I was wondering what about like Thai culture influences your work and kind of there's never like a singular country's attitude towards sexuality, obviously, but kind of like from like growing up, what were some of the messages you received about sexuality and like how have they like impacted you as an adult now?
Oh, I love talking about this because I think a lot of people don't know about this is the stereotype about Thailand is Thai culture is very sexual due to how popular sex tourism is in Thailand.
Mm. Yeah.
Men from around the world will fly to Thailand to go have sex with prostitutes or sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a thing everyone knows. Like it's not a taboo thing. Like it's a thing everyone knows. There's a lot of British men there.
Yeah.
You know, having sex with sex workers. Like it's a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet what people don't know is Thai culture is very, very, very sexually conservative. We don't even get sex education. There's no sex ed. So it's so conservative. Sex is never talked about in the household. Sex is even rarely talked about in a relationship. Sex is not taught. So there's no sex education in school. It is very conservative. And because it's not talked about, the subliminary or micro messages that we get about sex and how we make meaning of what being sexual means is through media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I learned everything about how much we value or don't value sex from media, from watching like soap operas and, you know.
Wow,
like, yeah. From TV shows in Thailand and movies. And
what kind of messages were in them?
Yeah. The messages that are in them are, number one, good women are not sexual.
Right. Uh-huh.
Good women, goody-goody are like angelic, pure women that are not sexual, don't talk about sex, don't know what sex is, very innocent.
Mm.
Number two, sexually confident women are bad women or whores.
Yeah.
Not marriageable, not girlfriend material. They're like side chicks material.
Yeah. It's the Madonna whore complex.
100%. Like full stream in Thailand. And then number three, men do what the fuck ever they want. Yeah. Because we have bathhouses. In Thailand, anyone can go anytime. Walk in, just walk in. No need for appointments. walk in, select a girl in one of these containers, like a room with like one-sided mirror.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Select a girl. They take you to the room. They wash you. They have sex with you. It's a known thing in Thailand, known thing that men go and do and accept it. So that's number three is men can do what the fuck ever they want.
What fun.
So that's the three messages I have learned as a young girl in Thailand when it comes to sexuality.
How did you get to where you are now then as a you know, like as a sex researcher and clearly not like believing in those values anymore? Like, what was that journey like?
Hannah.
We need another hour.
A lot of fucking work.
Yeah.
Just a lot of work, straight work. The number one thing, the first thing was desire to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, breaking down, crying, and just like, what the fuck's wrong with me?
Mm.
And finding out what is wrong with me and why am I this way? And getting out of that pattern and moving forward in a new direction and basically committing to my new person.
Mm-hmm.
And continuously behave like this new person, new set of values. And it's hard. I talk to a lot of clients and friends that, you know, are now in the space where I was, and I know exactly what it's like, and it's not a happy place.
Yeah. Because those values are so entrenched. Ridden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was young, you know, I had consistently had different boyfriends, right? Because I had no idea how I was supposed to be, what a healthy relationship looks like, what a healthy sexual relationship looks like, how to initiate sex or not initiate sex. So I had a lot of like bad relationships. And because of that, I would say a lot of girls thought, you know, like I'm a slut.
Hmm.
And not, you know, not a good girl due to that. And I worked on getting rid of that for a long time. Right? Like,
yeah.
How do you get out of that idea that just because you were sexually active and I was just a horny kid. I'm still horny. Like, I'm just a horny girl. Like, what can I do? I couldn't help my hormones.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like 15 and horny. What can I do?
What can you do?
Right. Yeah. And all I knew was, you know, approaching people romantically and had some type of sexual experience, not necessarily penetration, but has some type of sexual experience.
Yeah.
And then you become a slut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you get rid of that label? Not only for societally,
you
but like
move countries. You leave the country.
So yeah, if anyone wants to come to America, just kidding.
Yeah. Cause it's notoriously great over there as well.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Yeah. But I've worked on it for a long time with a therapist, with a coach, and just for myself is committing to new practices, right? Journaling, talking about sex, and really like becoming a sex researcher has been healing. Because the more I research, I mean, this book is no joke. It's huge.
Yeah. Wow. It's a massive textbook.
It's a textbook. Yeah.
And
researching for this book, I learned so much about the variety of attitudes, experiences, practices of sex around the world. And it's just very eye-opening. And it makes me feel much more like, oh, you know, I'm super
when you
normal.
Have that knowledge about the actual reality of sexuality.
Yeah.
Rather than these like conservative values that you're fed as a child. Yeah. We've got a bunch of questions from folks on Instagram.
Okay.
Who want to ask you. Somebody asked, where do I start with dirty talk? My partner wants it, but I completely freeze and I don't know what to say.
Ooh.
Do you have any dirty talk tips?
Love it. Yeah, I actually like, it's funny. There's a whole chapter in this textbook. So let me go there.
Oh my God, yeah. I love the idea of having like a school textbook that's like how to do dirty talk.
Dirty talk is actually, there's a lot of research that found that people that are more sexually confident do more dirty talk, which makes a lot of sense, right? Yeah, like of course.
I think people also build dirty talk up in their mind as something bigger than what it needs to be. Like it doesn't have to be like this huge role play thing necessarily.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like what, let's say, you know, what do you think? What do you, let's give an example. Let's give
oh
an example.
Oh God, okay.
What would you say? Like just one sentence, one thing.
I really like it when you touch me there.
Yeah, There you go. Then that's literally, that by itself can be dirty talk. Like, I think people think, you know, the super non-PC version that's like, yeah, you come here, you fucking slang the shit like dog down your throat. Like, you know, I think that's what, because that's what they see on porn.
Yeah.
That's where everyone learns everything.
Yeah.
Is porn.
It's just a bit, it's talking about what you are doing, what you want to do, what you just did.
Right. And it doesn't really, it really never has to be something that intense. It can be, I love your body.
Mm.
It can be a directive, like bend over.
Ooh, yeah.
Spicy. Yeah. Like if you just say that with conviction, bend over. Like that's hot, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
if you want to bend over, or if the other person also wants to bend over, caveat everything.
I know. I'm like star. Like,
yeah.
I want to be your dirty slut.
Ooh, yeah. Getting spicy.
Because remember, dirty talk is not PC. Like, this is not real life.
But you can take it as far as you want, like as far as you're comfortable with as well. And
say,
also,
you
I think
taste
like
so good. I love this one. You taste so good.
I like that.
I think my when I feel very when I feel very like spicy, I might say like, "Daddy tastes so good," and he blushes. He like blushes, and he's like, uh huh.
yeah. I think this also like comes back to what we were saying near the beginning about the aftercare as well, because if you do take your dirty talk quite far with lots of like slut, bitch, fuck and all, like, you know, whatever, then that might, you know, that might not be how you talk to each other outside of that context. And so like having that transitional moment, having that aftercare to kind of bring you out of that and into your non-sexual life together, where you're not like slapping each other around the ass and calling each other like a slut, bitch, fuck, cunt or whatever.
100%, like the come down that has to be.
Yeah, exactly. The because so also sometimes I think it's quite funny when you might shock yourself in terms of like what you say in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then you need a moment to be like, did I just say that? Like,
oh, exactly. Exactly. It's and like, you know, especially in a heterosexual relationship, I think there's so much wiggle room for what men can say.
Yeah, right.
And that can be like, it could be hurtful.
Yeah, because everyone's going to have different boundaries in terms of like what feels good and what actually could potentially be like some triggering words or phrases for them as well.
100%. So be gentle.
Yeah.
With your dirty talk.
Be gentle, dirty talk. Somebody actually asked, so how does one become a sex researcher and why was it something that you wanted to do?
Love that. So anyone can become a sex researcher right now by just, you know, if we're talking about understanding a body of research, like understanding, let's say you want to understand faked orgasm literature, you can start just reading peer review research articles and writing faked orgasm summaries and submit it to like Psychology Today and you're a sex researcher. Right.
Anyone
researcher like tomorrow, if you have the will to do so. Right. But if you're talking about like academically, whether or not you're in your undergraduate degree or master's or a PhD, at every level, you will be conducting research. And this includes like collecting data from participants in different things. And when you're at school, you'll learn how to collect data, how to write up the data analysis and stuff like that. So I would say if you're interested in academically, definitely go to school for a topic related to it, right? It can be social sciences degree, psychology degree, communication degree, anthropology degree. There's so many degrees that can.
And there are some universities that do have like specifically sex. Like sex. Like sexuality. Sex. There's some as well. Like I know in the UK, there's some like master's courses that are about like sex and culture and sex and media and society. So like, and then there's also like the more like medical
sexual health
as well. The sexual health route. So there's lots of options. But I love the idea that like, hey, anyone can be a researcher and like, hey, you can survey your group of friends.
Exactly.
And then see what trends you find.
Exactly. You can be like, hey, like 30 people, take my survey. I have a 5-question survey about how you feel about sex. And then you can say like, hey, I collect anonymous survey and I want to post it somewhere.
Yeah.
You can post it on Medium. And who knows, maybe it becomes super big and someone wants to interview you for your 30 people survey. What did you find?
Yeah. Oh, I do like a sexy survey on my Instagram polls every year with my audience. And so now I'm just like, oh, I'm a researcher. I'm surveying people about sex.
I love it. I recently did a poll of the vulva and vagina. And I like a picture of it. And I said, is this a vulva or vagina? And it's a picture of the whole system. So vulva.
Yeah.
Then, you know, like 61% said vagina. And so I looked into the 61%, it's boys.
Oh, no. Come on. Oh, dear. Well, Tara, thank you so much for joining me. This has just been absolutely delightful. Do please plug away all of your stuff, your textbook, your ebook, your social media. Like, where can people find more of you and your brilliant work?
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an orgasmic conversation.
Ooh, love it.
You can find me on my website, lovebites.co. That's LUVBITES.CO. All my social media is lovebites.co. I have Instagram and TikTok. My TikTok is very bustling right now, so it's a fun place to be.
That's cool.
And you can find all my work on my website, lovebites.co. Thanks for having me, Hannah.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. Goodbye.